welcome to Community Conversations. These are pre-recorded interviews brought to you each Tuesday and Thursday at 8 a.m. on KRFY. Because of ongoing concerns about the COVID pandemic, we are not able to be in the studio doing live broadcast interviews right now. But we are still dedicated to recording and bringing to you topics of local and current interest, highlighting voices from our community. For Community Conversations, we are using phones and web-based technology so that participants can be recorded remotely. Please bear with us if there are any gaps or hiccups that might be caused by a slow or unstable phone or internet connection. Also, keep in mind that because these interviews are recorded, information may change between the time of this recording and the time that you hear it broadcast. Thank you for joining us for today's Community Conversation on KRFY 88.5 FM, listener-supported community radio for North Idaho. Good morning, and welcome to the Tuesday edition of Community Conversations. This morning, I'm your host, Phil Huff, and my normal co-host, Julie Calamine, is not able to be with us. As we enter into the late stages of May, I think she snuck off to go fishing, although she said she had a doctor's appointment. So we love you, Julie, if you're listening. So we'll launch right into our topic this morning, which is an update from the Lake Pend'Oreille Waterkeepers. And we're going to get to meet the new associate executive director along the way. We have with us today the executive director and one of the founders, Steve Holt. Good morning, Steve.
Morning, Phil. Thanks for having us. Really appreciate it.
And Carolyn Knack, the Associate Executive Director. So let's do, as we always try to, for our listeners who might be new to the community, we have a lot of those. Steve, start with a little bit of background about yourself and what you do with the Waterkeepers.
Well, I moved here to Sagal back in 1993 and just completely fell in love with the area. Fly fishing has always been, you know, a huge passion of mine, and sort of with that, the love of water. And I just really feel connected to it in some way. And so for me to be able to like have this opportunity with this organization right now, you know, I feel blessed to be able to be out there on the front lines of trying to protect such a valuable resource. It's been great. It's not, obviously, you know, Phil, it's not always easy running a nonprofit and being an environmental advocate, but, you know, we take our bumps and bruises along the way, but, I think just sort of hitting the streams and understanding the value of water is something that really drove me.
Very good. And Carolyn, tell us a little bit about yourself and let's take a little deeper dive. We want to welcome you to the nonprofit community of Sandpoint. Tell us more about yourself.
Well, thanks, Phil. So originally I'm from Eastern Washington near Pullman. I went to University of Washington in Seattle after high school and I studied biology. And I didn't totally know where I wanted to go with biology, but I knew that I wanted to stay in the natural sciences. So I took like ecology courses and physiology courses. And my senior year, I took a limnology course, which is the study of freshwater ecosystems. And so my mom had moved up here a few years prior and had met Gray Henderson, who was on the board of directors for the Waterkeeper. And so Gray heard that I was taking limnology and offered to take me out with him on his boat when he did the water quality monitoring program in October. And so I went with him and I learned about what he did as a volunteer, what he did with the Waterkeeper, you know, kind of a bit more about water quality. And I loved it. I thought it was really awesome. It was great. And so then for my limnology class, it came to be like my favorite class. I've always loved water and I loved ecology. And so combining the two was just perfect. And it's actually been like the best class because I've been using like my class notes in this job. And like then I write articles and do educational stuff, making sure I have the concepts correct. And so then after college, I went and did an internship with the Forest Service doing stream surveys down in Mount Hood. And it was incredible. I just got to wander upstreams and look for fish and do habitat surveys. And I loved it and I wanted to keep doing it, but I couldn't figure out something to do over the winter. And so the winter of 2019, Gray got a hold of me again and said there was an opening to come in and work in the office of the Waterkeeper. And so then that winter I came up here and I moved to Sandpoint. I worked with the Waterkeeper temporarily with the idea that I was going back to the Forest Service in the summer. But when I stepped into the office on the first day, I had no idea what I was getting into. I had no nonprofit experience. I just had like a college education and an internship with the Forest Service. And so it was really eye-opening, all the stuff that such a small nonprofit could do and was doing in this community. And being able to use my education to educate others and talk about really important issues is really awesome, and I loved it. And so last May, I left to go do more stream surveys in Colville National Forest. And when that season was coming to an end and I was looking for kind of figuring out what I wanted to do afterwards, Steve got a hold of me and said that I was able to come back to the Waterkeeper, or asked me if I was able to come back and work in the office again. And, you know, I jumped at it. I loved it. I loved the idea of coming back to Sandpoint. It's such a beautiful place to live. And Lake Pendre is really just such a magnificent lake. And it's really a dream job. I mean, working with water and, you know, trying to preserve and protect it for everybody, and everybody loves the lake. And so it's a really worthwhile cause. And then getting into community education and advocacy and all the amazing things that the Waterkeeper does and that I get to do. And so here I am back in Sandpoint, and I'm really excited to keep working with Waterkeeper.
Your passion for your job comes through. Tell us about, we like to ask people who are new, relatively new, their Longbridge moment, and it sounds like yours might be a Lakeshore moment, but what was that aha epiphany that you said, yeah, this is the place I want to be?
Well, I remember the first time I came up and visited my mom in Bonner's Ferry, me and my sister were coming up, and we had never been to up this north in Idaho before, and we drive over the Longbridge, and just both our jaws drop. It's like, it's one of the most stunning scenes I'd seen. And I mean, the lake just spreads out in both ways. And I think it was even, you know, around sunset. And so you get this big, beautiful orange haze over the edges and the mountains in the background. And I mean, it's a spectacular sight to see, you know, when you first come to Sandpoint. And it's incredible. You know, some of us that live here, you see it almost every day. But yeah, I think it's, you know, for me, it was cool because, you know, it's so recent that, you know, the magnificence of Lake Pendre and coming over the Longbridge.
I still personally marvel, and I'm sure Steve will echo this, every time I drive across the Longbridge, or I live in Segal as well, or ride my bike across the Longbridge, you just look west, look up north, look east, and you feel like this is home. So it's great that there are so many organizations, and the Waterkeeper's chief among them, doing something to make sure that this is a place that continues to be attractive, both from the physical amenity sense as well as we living well within our means, if you will, with the environment. So we want to launch into a little bit of the work of the Pendre Waterkeepers and how that's come about and how the work contributes to that. So Steve, since you've been with the organization since its start, why don't you give us the brief history of the organization, how it got going, how its missions evolved?
Yeah, thanks for the opportunity. I think the start was really back in 2006 when the Idaho Department of Agriculture, or the legislature, I should say, approved a $12 million aquatic invasive species program for the state. And Lake Pendre was a big recipient. I think we ended up getting almost half of the total funding over a three-year period of time. And primarily that was to apply aquatic herbicides to the lake to combat Eurasian water milfoil. And I think that there was a lot of community concern at that time about the implications, the long-term implications of applying these herbicides to the water. And our organization essentially was sort of born out of that. And, you know, Phil, we were on the Aquatic Invasive Species Task Force, you know, appointed by the county, and sat around the table for several years, you know, debating the issue. But that was sort of the beginning and the roots. And we paid a lot of attention to that particular issue over the years, and frankly do. And from that, we started to realize, you know, the quantity of other threats that were really out there that we really needed to be paying attention to with regard to water quality. You know, we have five or six wastewater treatment facilities that discharge into the lake. We have, historic industry here that used toxic chemicals and things that storm water and groundwater had picked up and flushed into the lake. We've got fossil fuel byproducts. You know, there's an array of issues that we're currently working on, and so and that was the beginning. And I feel blessed that we're still here a decade later. We've had great community support. You know, there's been quite a few. We have good membership. We have a good membership base. We have some local foundations that really support us, and are really. I'm really feeling like right now we're sort of at a tipping point of awareness too in our community. I think a lot more people are starting to pay attention to what's happening in the lake as they see these small sort of problem areas kick in. So, you know, our mission is really to just really protect and advocate for, clean water throughout the basin, from the Cabinet Gorge Dam all the way down to Albany Falls and all its tributaries.
It's a lot of work, and it's not always so obvious driving across that long bridge what the threats are. So important to get the information out there, especially as we see a influx of people new to the area. And that's been one of the changes of the recent years, that influx. But tell us about this last year. How has the pandemic impacted the work of the waterkeepers?
Well, I can speak to that a little bit. I think that we, as an organization, aren't directly involved with the kind of industries and, our survival mechanism for being able to, be a restaurant or a service industry where our business is actually being hampered. So we were fortunate enough in that regard, but it did affect if it affected anything for us, and I'll let Carolyn comment on this as well, but I think it was our educational programming. We had a lake model presentation that we brought into the fifth grade classroom for a number of years, and we would do that throughout the year. And that program got shuttled right when the schools closed, obviously. And then this year, we're also not really able to get in there. So I don't know, Carolyn, do you want to add anything further to that?
Yeah, it was mainly it was right around when we were gearing up to get into the schools and do all these presentations. It was that week that they got shut down. And I think it was just kind of chaos that spring trying to figure out, if we could do anything to help the teachers. And we had to cancel our watershed discovery camp just out of concern. And we're not doing it again this year just because, where there's still so many things we're unsure about. And then again, this year, there were so many uncertainties and differences in the school year that we just kind of stepped back and have kind of focused on revamping our educational programs and maybe kind of reformatting them to improve them while we have this opportunity.
There is, I might add, there's this one other indirect consequence that I think was actually turned out to be a benefit to a lot of organizations with regard to meeting attendance, but this whole being able to access Zoom and having more and more municipalities and governmental agencies accept the fact that they're going to provide this opportunity, we can sit in on, multiple meetings, a week and to really stay informed about what's really going on rather than having to drive all the way down to Coeur d'Alene or Boise or, make an appointment at the county or the city. And so I think it's, and not only for us, but it's given the general public, an easier avenue to be able to get informed. So in some ways, I think that's a benefit.
Yeah, that's a really, really good point. My old nonprofit worked with a couple of different organizations. It's leveled the geographic playing field, being able to attend conferences or putting on seminars and draw people from a wider geography that would be possible with the limits by travel restrictions.
Absolutely.
And I think it is something that as we return back to whatever the new normal is, we'll probably all still rely some on audio, video, conferencing, Zoom, or others.
Yeah, and I think the municipalities and governmental agencies should continue to utilize that service or make it available.
Yep. So it's increased the ability for public comment, which is so important. Let's launch into some of the things that are coming up that are now you're either able to do because of the lifting of COVID restrictions, or you've been able to continue to do regardless. But we've got a short hit list here, and please add in any that I miss. But you've got a shoreline cleaning cleanup day that's coming up real soon here.
Yep. Yeah. On the Saturday after Earth Day, April 24th, we're going to be down at City Beach from 10 a.m. to 1 p.m. And this is an annual event we've been doing for years, but we weren't able to do it last year because of COVID and gathering restrictions. And so I'm really excited that we're able to do it this year. And we're working with the city, and they're helping provide bags. We've gotten bags from the Army Corps of Engineers. Evans Bros is supplying coffee. We're going to get donuts and treats for everybody. It's really exciting. Whenever I meet someone new, I try and invite them because it's a great way to meet people in the community. And being someone who is new to the community myself, I'm really eager to meet other people who have been involved in the Waterkeeper for years and doing the cleanups for years, as well as other new people in the community who are just looking to just either just volunteer and care for our watershed and our lake, or just to, you know, do something to get outside and, you know, celebrate Earth Day together. It's also a unique year as we've been working with a couple of other businesses who are unable to attend on Saturdays or busy Saturdays to do private cleanups. And so that's really exciting for me to kind of partner with these businesses and work with their employees to clean up specific areas throughout that week. So next week, we actually have a total of 4 cleanups scheduled to go around our shoreline and kind of public areas and pick up trash and meet new people and care for our environment.
Yeah, nothing quite says spring like putting on rubber boots and walking around in the muck.
Exactly. Yeah,
and I think it's great. Carolyn really spearheaded that whole business cleanup effort, and Carolyn, I think you should give the businesses a shout out. You know.
Yeah. So on Monday we're going to be working with the Wildflower Spa at Seasons to clean up the Sand Creek Trail, and then on Earth Day itself, we're going to be celebrating with the Ponderay Winery at the Bay Trail and clean up that trail. And then we're going to be meeting with Evans Bros and clean up Dog Beach and around the Long Bridge.
Nice. Very nice. And I think, as I recall right, there's a training next week. In fact, well, we say next week, this will air next Tuesday. Everyone knows we're recording these. And I think on Tuesday evening, you have a training.
Mm-hmm. Yep, yeah, there's a... Go ahead, Carolyn.
Sorry. Yeah, on Tuesday, on April 20th, we're going to be having our volunteer training for our water quality monitoring program, which is, it's going to be our 10th year of monitoring. So I'm really excited for this year because we're finally figuring out, you know, a baseline data set. So we're able to identify outliers and issues in our watershed. And we've been getting a lot of excitement from our volunteers and attention from new volunteers, which is, you know, it's great because, as you said, that we're getting a lot of new people in the community. And so people are looking for ways to get involved and get out on the water and contribute to protecting our wild places.
Tell us a little bit more. Let's talk about the water quality monitoring program for folks who are listening in and aren't quite sure what it is. Tell us the big picture. What's it meant to do?
Well, I think it's meant to give information to essentially DEQ and the EPA when we find, you know, issues in particular areas. Take, for example, over in Boyer Slough, which is an area that gets a lot of agricultural runoff from north of town here. It also is a point of discharge for the Kootenai-Ponderay Sewer District. And so over the years, we noticed that there was a lot of algae blooms there. You know, phosphorus and nitrogen levels were off the charts. We were able to notify DEQ of our findings, and then they go out and essentially do confirm with their own monitoring, and then they can write regulations that will affect permitting processes for these wastewater treatment facilities. So that's one added sort of benefit. You know, if we are able to, we can understand the areas that, you know, we've got overall the water quality of Lake Ponderay is very good, but we're also finding, like in our stormwater monitoring program, we've got some toxic chemicals from the old pole yard that sits there behind off of Boyer and Super One, and that groundwater actually leaches all the way down into a stormwater drain that dumps into Sand Creek. So were able to notify the EPA and DEQ that these things are going on, because they just don't really have it within their budget, you know, to be able to monitor everything.
Some of this was the basis for a recent grant that you've requested, I think, have gotten approved from the EPA.
Yeah, we got a 319 grant. It's not official, but it's like 99% official, I guess, is what the work
is. Checks in the mail.
Yeah, right, so to speak. But yeah, we had a great program where we are getting some funding for our monitoring program. So there's a lot of support for that from the EPA now and DEQ, since, you know, our program is well recognized. Like Carolyn said, we've been doing it for a decade. And then we also worked with the city of Ponderay to install a newer technology vis-a-vis a stormwater filtration catch basin. And so we got some funding to be able to install this catch basin. And then we're going to test that catch basin for its efficacy. And if all turns out right, it could be, you know, quite a game changer for stormwater here, especially in the city of Sandpoint. You know, we have, I think there's something like 35 discharge, stormwater discharge locations, you know, between Sand Creek and the lake. The city has been, City of Sandpoint's been very proactive about looking at innovative stormwater techniques. I know they have a project that's going to be down here at Farman's Landing that's a part of a bigger improvement. They've got a project over at Memorial Field, in the next phase of that work, it's going to take quite a large stormwater catch basin area all the way back up in through Super One and towards the north of town. All that water discharges out at Memorial Field. So they've got a system there that they're working on. And I think that if we can prove and that this system, you know, has some merit, it really pulls out a lot of the phosphorus out of water, and it can be installed in a variety of different locations within the city. So it could be a real game changer. And we're really happy about that. I mean, we were thrilled that we were, as you know, some of these application processes are quite arduous, especially one with the EPA, right?
And government grants, congratulations.
Yeah, a lot of information.
So. Let's talk a little bit about some of the products you're working with, some of the informational products. I know there's a couple of different videos. There's the Water Summit video. Let's start with that one.
Yeah, I'll speak to that one a little bit. I think it was like 2 years ago now. Time goes by. That we had our first Water Summit, and Bobby Kennedy Jr. came, and he was a keynote speaker for us. We brought in some experts from around the United States on a variety of different topics related to water. And so we were in the process of continuing that same effort last year when, again, we got shut down by COVID, the Panetta Theater closed, and, you know, we obviously nobody could gather. And so in lieu of that, we decided that we would put together a Water Summit State of the Lake event. I guess webinar sort of series. And so we are in the process of sort of making an informational video for the community members so that they can get informed about things like wastewater treatment, stormwater. We've got a fisheries person coming in, and so some of the other different threats. And so it's really a way, since we're sort of hamstrung by COVID, it's really a way for us to be able to get some information out into the community. And then as a part of that video series, we've gone and put together, as I mentioned previously, our lake model presentation to the fifth graders sort of got pulled away. And so now we're in the process of actually finishing up that series. And I'm going to let Carolyn talk about that one a little bit, because she was instrumental in sort of putting that video together.
Yeah, the lake model video was a really awesome opportunity because it's much more adaptable than our classroom presentation. And so the classroom presentation of bringing in the lake model and working with the kids has been going on since 2012. And when I came in last year, I was getting ready to do it, and it got canceled. And so when I came back this fall and winter, we were planning to remodel it and do it virtually, to record it and kind of revamp it. And so what I was able to do was kind of remodel the lake model presentation and make it adaptable for video, because it's usually an interactive experience for the kids to help build a lake ecosystem using our cross-sectional model of a lake. So instead it's just me. And so I expanded the program. We talk more about lake ecology. So we talk about, like I said, in my limnology class, you know, I was able to kind of apply these college level concepts and, you know, work with educators and stuff and break them down into kind of elementary school level adaptability. And so we talk about, you know, physics and chemistry of water. We talk about ecology and trophic systems, and we talk about pollution and human impacts. And so it's become this big video, and we're able to break it down into chapters so the teachers can kind of make it adaptable to their classrooms. We're building a workbook so it can be an interactive experience. They can do activities and worksheets and learn about vocabulary. And so it's become a really cool educational program that we're hoping we can really implement into classrooms, both within our watershed and share with the waterkeeper organizations across the U.S.
We've actually got, we're a regular film production company now down here, Phil. We've got our office has got backdrops, and we've got lighting and cameras. And Carolyn is going to win an Academy Award, I tell you, for this video series that she's putting together. So it's just awesome.
Yeah, if Steve votes a million times, I'll get it for sure.
Videos are good. So I've got to ask then, do you have it up on a YouTube channel?
Oh, no, it's all secret, Phil. No, it's not for distribution. No, I'd say we're probably a month away from completing our lake ecology program. And then sometime this summer, we'll be putting together the Water Summit webinar series. And then, you know, the other video piece that we're putting together is for our water quality monitoring training. And that is just such that in the event that we have a situation where we can't really meet together, we can give our volunteers this video. They can also, if they forget something, they can brush up on it. And we have to have them well trained up in order to comply with the requirements from DEQ with regard to our citizen science program. So, yeah, we're excited.
That's another offshoot, I think, of this whole pandemic, is how we've learned to move trainings online. I know, again, with some other organizations I've had, doing in-person trainings depends on everyone being available at the same time. We've been able to shift some to online and reach more people more effectively, and that's got to continue.
Sure.
So you've mentioned the Water Summit a couple times. I know you've done that in the fall in the past and had one plan that was canceled last year. Are you planning a fall Water Summit this year?
Well, I think we're concentrating right now on doing this film series during the summer, but that's a good question. I think that, you know, I don't think our board of directors has made that decision yet, but it's certainly something that, you know, we want to bring every year, right? So there's some sort of consistency to it, and so that people can, like, really be, you know, it was just a wonderful way for the community to be able to gather in one place at one time and hear from people who had expertise in particular areas, and then be able to answer some questions. So we definitely want to keep it going.
Good. So beyond the videos, there's still some traditional printed material, isn't there? The water brochure is, you've got a new one of those out, don't you?
Yeah, that's our first drinking water brochure. We got a source water protection grant with the Department of Environmental Quality. And with that grant, we've been working really hard on drinking water education, because part of our mission is to keep Lake Ponderay drinkable, swimmable, fishable. And so I've been really emphasizing the drinkable part, because I believe there's 5 communities, at least around the shoreline, that rely on Lake Ponderay for their drinking water, including Sandpoint, Kootenai, and Ponderay. And we also rely on other sources such as groundwater and streams and wells and everything. And then, you know, Lake Ponderay actually feeds the Rathdrum Prairie Aquifer, which then provides drinking water for the Spokane Valley, their Spokane area. So Lake Ponderay is a massive drinking water source. And I mean, it's a huge lake. And so we've been working on kind of educating people about you know, how we keep our drinking water sources clean and the importance of them. And so we created this new brochure as well as a new webpage on our website, educating our community about our drinking water sources and about, you know, where the drinking water comes from, what are the treatment methods. There's a bunch of information online from the Department of Environmental Quality about, you know, drinking water tests and if they're safe and if there's any contaminants in the water. And looking at, you know, what that is available online, is there isn't anything of concern for the people who rely on the drinking water in the area. But there have historically been some issues, such as over in Hope in the East Hope area. And there are some communities who are, they have to go through the process of getting a new permit for getting a new water treatment plan for the drinking water. And it is a really important issue because, you know, having clean drinking water is an integral part of having a healthy and happy community. And so it's something that, you know, I believe is a really important part of our job is to keep our water clean and to keep our communities healthy.
It's a big lake, and I know a lot of individuals get their water still out of the lake, not just municipalities. So it's a really important issue, and dealing with the water source protection is really important. It's also incumbent to deal with the point source pollution. And I know there's one project you've started working on around Trestle Creek. Wanted to make sure to bring up. I'm not sure, Steve, if that's you or Carolyn, but talk to us a little bit about that sewer district expansion happening over there and what you're doing with that.
Yeah, that's the Trestle Creek project is really a sort of a marina development issue that we've been commenting on. But the point source piece I think you're talking about is the Kootenai Ponderay Sewer District. And as with the city of Sandpoint, you know, their permits are renewed like every 5 years. And so when these renewed permits come up, if they have different standards that are happening, you know, if the water is polluted at a certain level out forward of them, then it's going to change the type of treatment that they need to do. And they're in a bit of a pickle over there. Right now they have a pond system. They do a land applied. They do very well with the facility that they have, but they're going to end up having to do some sort of major redevelopment, such as the city is also in the process of doing. So we've been like, since we were working with them on the water quality issue out in Boyer Slough, been trying to like work with DEQ and the Ponderay Sewer District to try and help understand exactly where this whole thing is headed. And certainly we're always looking at, you know, we want the best, right? We want to make sure that we have the best possible filtration system or the best treatment system that we can have before we do any discharges to the lake. So that'll be an ongoing project over the next 2 years, probably, before any decisions on that one get made. The city of Sandpoint is also, as you know, they're working on a big project to repair or, and I should say, install new sewer lines and laterals in a certain sector of our community so that they can understand how much infiltration from a particular area is getting into their treatment before they completely redesign the system that's coming. And so that'll be another 5-year sort of project there, but a good one. I think it's, you know, it's well needed. The city of Sandpoint wastewater treatment plan is quite it's old, antiquated technology. And so hopefully we'll be able to work closely with both of those entities to really help get better projects.
Very good. And so what's happening with the marina project? You touched on that very briefly.
Yeah, I mean, well, there's a few things. You know, typically we have not commented too much on shoreline development projects. And, you know, if somebody's going to build a single family residence or something, it's not, you know, we're not over there like hounding them endlessly about erosion control measures and stormwater and all this kind of stuff. You know, there's just like so many things going on. But now, even more so than ever, you know, with the economy doing what it is, we're seeing like a surge in sort of development around the lake. And so it's quite concerning. There's been several projects that have come up that have been one that you mentioned is a marina out over at Trestle Creek, which in our opinion is just a far reach from what it should be in terms of the amount of dredge and fill. I think there's 15,000 cubic yards of of dredging that's going to happen. There's an entire removal of an island that's got an active bald eagle's nest. Trestle Creek currently is one of the largest bull trout spawning tributaries in the Northwest. And there's all kinds of fish and game data to prove it. And so how they were able to get a permit over a 10-year period of time, this process started back in 2008. They were granted a permit from the Army Corps of Engineers to do the initial dredging, ran out, they re-extended it, they reapplied for it. You know, all these different things has created a very convoluted sort of process to a point where the public and even our organization and other organizations, and DEQ, all of us, were trying to figure out like how this whole thing happened. And so there was a lot of going back. Unfortunately, the county at this point did approve the project. We've since filed a motion to reconsider, which was denied. But there is the Center for Biological Diversity is interested in continuing to look at the project as it relates to the bull trout habitat, since they're a threatened species. So, you know, it's really one of many different developments that are proposed on the lake right now. And we're going to have to start paying more and more attention to these kinds of things in the future.
It's a big lake.
It is a big lake.
Lots to keep an eye on there. And I will put my plug in for that kind of work, because I think one of the things we're really blessed with such a large lake is the amount of undeveloped land. It's so important to have that. If you look at other large lakes in the West, they're almost all in private hands around the land, and yet we have public lands around a good solid third of our lake. And if you want to really appreciate that, you need to get in a boat and go down that east side of the long arm of the Lake Pend'Oreille. We did that in a kayak last summer, but whether it's from a kayak or a powerboat, staring up at those cliffs and at the undeveloped land really gives you an appreciation for just what a treasure it is and why it's so worthwhile to protect.
Absolutely. I mean, it's just stunning out there. I think that, you know, we all have our Long Bridge moment, right? But when you head out and you take the turn out there headed east, and you come out into the bigger part of the lake and you're staring down at the green monarchs and looking all the way down towards, you know, Bayview, I mean, that's just absolutely stunning out there. So, yeah, it is a big lake. And that's one of the reasons why we're here. You know, I mean, it's a beautiful thing, and we don't want to see it compromised.
Well, it would be a good note to end on, but I do have one more question for you. It's about Waterkeeper Wednesdays.
Oh.
Tell us about those.
Yeah, Waterkeeper Wednesdays is a new program we're really hoping to implement this summer. So, like I said before, we're unable to do our camps again this summer. However, since we have a really awesome location in the Cedar Street Bridge, we're right above the treehouse at Creation. And so every day we hear the kids running and screaming around. And so we're working with Sherry Meekings, who runs Creation, to have sort of a Waterkeeper Wednesdays program, where I'm able to go down there every other week and offer a free opportunity for kids to come in and learn about, you know, some aspect of water or ecology, or do a fun activity to get them excited about the lake and the natural ecosystems, and just kind of get their hands wet. And there's so many ways that we can do this, and such as like a kind of fish ecology courses. We can learn about the water cycle. We can learn about like macro invertebrates and little bugs and stuff, and, you know, encourage them to go out there themselves and become good lake stewards. And it's a really awesome location, because also we're right above Sand Creek and just minutes from Lake Pend'Oreille. So if you're learning about these concepts, all the kids have to do is look out the window and see where they can apply them, and go outside and show their parents what they learn. And so we're really hoping to do this new program, because the bridge is such a great location, because it's central to Sandpoint. It's a beautiful spot. Creations is an amazing organization, and we get a lot of tourists coming in and, you know, asking, you know, what does the Waterkeeper do? And if they see us downstairs, you know, working with the kids, they can, you know, they can stop and listen in and learn about something new.
Is it too premature to announce a potential launch date for that?
We're hoping to start in early June. So hopefully the first week of June, we'll start those and go through about September or August, somewhere in there.
Stay tuned for more information, as they say. Well, as we wind down to a close, is there anything else either of you would like to mention? Contact information for yourselves, for the water keepers, for the website?
Yeah, you can reach us at Steve and or Carolyn at lpow.org. You can phone us at 208-597-7188, or please visit our website, lpow.org. And I did want to just like throw in one encouragement for the general public. I really think that it would be great to go onto our website and look at the drinking water page that Carolyn has put together. She's got it's all mapped out. If you're interested in where your water comes from, you can definitely see it there. There's just a wealth of information there. We're also in the process of doing a wastewater treatment map so that we can understand how many different wastewater treatment plants charge into the lake. And so Carolyn has been our website. And I guess, in closing for me, I just want to thank the community for all the support that you've given us, this past decade. And I feel it's a hopeful time, and I look forward to, working with all the volunteers and also a big shout out to KRFY for doing what you guys do. And, helping us out, not only us, but just all the other nonprofits and all the other organizations that are doing good things in this community. And you're a great vehicle for assisting all of us to be able to get the word out there. So thank you, Phil, and to the rest of the team.
It takes a community. Carolyn, you've got the last word.
Well, yeah, I guess I just want to say thank you to the community. Everyone has been so kind welcoming me to Sandpoint and the organization. I'm so excited to be here and to meet more people. I love meeting people. I'm really excited for all our programs and events coming up to meet our volunteers. I love talking to them on the phone. You can also find us on social media. So our Facebook page is one of our main routes of getting information out there. We share relevant articles. If you go to our website, you can sign up for our newsletter. We send out a monthly update of what we're up to, any blog updates, anything interesting, any new publications. We're also on Instagram and Twitter at the Lake Ponderay Waterkeeper. And we also, twice a year, we come out with a semi-annual report, which I then hand out to a lot of the local organizations and businesses around town. So you can find them at a lot of the breweries. You can find them at kind of shops and outdoor kind of recreation shop. Or you can come into the office at Cedar Street Bridge and pick one up. You can find them online. I'm really excited. I love this community. And thank you again for having us on, Phil. We really appreciate it.
Well, big thank you to you both. And if for some reason you missed the beginning of the show, our guests today were Steve Holt, Executive Director of the Lake Ponderay Waterkeepers, and Carol Knack, the Associate ED, the new Associate ED. And we've been talking about all things waterkeepers, programs, and stuff coming up. And if you missed any or most of today's show, you can listen to it. This is a recorded show. Everyone will know that as they're playing it, but we save these as podcasts at krfy.org. You can download the podcast at a slightly later date. If you like the community conversations but miss shows, that's a good way to do it. We also live stream if you're out of the area each Tuesday morning when we do community conversations. You can tune in at krfy.org and click the live stream button. We have a couple new features worth mentioning on the site. We do have a live playlist, so you can listen to the song, find out more about it that you were just listening to or all the way back for a whole week. And as one more community reminder, while vaccinations are still being done in the community, not everyone has received one yet, and the caseload is still at a relatively high stage. So do mask up when you go out, observe some basic social protocols, and stay safe for yourself and your neighbors. Thank you for listening.